Access all areas on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. I'm doing something different. Did you hear that?
I love it. We're mixing it right up.
Welcome to Access All Areas. I'm Stephen Legg.
And I'm Bobby Norris. How are you?
See, now we've gone back. Now we've gone back to what we normally do.
Drop babes.
Yeah, I like it, mate.
How's it going?
All right, mate. Wow. This is like a whole different show.
What's going on?
I am just fine. Thank you. Bob, how are you doing?
I'm really good, thank you. Really good. How's the office?
Office is boring, meetings dull, but the weather's nice, so that's good. Your beard's coming through a bit, I can see.
It really is. It's, I've had a nice little growth spell. I'm getting that kind of, that George Michael inspo.
Yeah. I like
it
that.
It was always my inspo.
Not George Michael in the outside video in the policeman's uniform in the toilet, I'm guessing. More like 80s
more
style.
Wham, kind of Club Tropicana days.
Got it.
Yeah, bless him. No, I loved it. I think that was my first crush. I mean, I don't know if we've took a right turn down here. We're going down to celeb crushes here. But
I'm into it, though. But also, I can totally see that because he was just handsome, wasn't he?
Oh, absolute salt. I actually thought, not, and when I say fault, I mean fault, not just wanted to, fault, I was going to marry him.
Oh.
Obviously, I didn't.
Yeah.
And that's delusional.
Maybe you would have helped save
right
him if you did.
But yeah, I thought, well, I've got to marry George Michael, he'll love me. All I had to do was bump into him, but it never happened. And the rest is history, unfortunately.
Me and my friend once, I used to work in Kentish Town, which isn't too far from Hampstead, where he used to live. And we went on a little tour around Hampstead because she knew where all the celebrities lived. So we went and we saw his house, saw Richard and Judy's house, saw Kate Moss's house. I mean, it was really like living the dream up in Hampstead. I mean, it's a lovely part of town, so you know, you can't complain.
Oh, stunning gaff.
Yeah.
And you know, if ever working uptown, sometimes if I'm in the back of a car, sometimes I take that route.
Oh, lovely. Lovely view.
Lovely view, stunning place. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking big bucks to live there.
Yeah.
But you know, even to this day, well, I've not been recently, but and I guess it will happen for years to come because he was just such a legend and loved by so many people. But still, things outside George's house.
Say that again. You stole things from outside George's house.
No, there's still things.
Oh, there's still.
No, I ain't been robbing. No, there's like flowers.
There are still things, not steal things. Okay,
I've not been stealing. But no, it's a lovely, lovely part of town. What's Richard and Judy's place like?
Not as big as you'd think.
Very modest, is it?
Yeah, but very, I mean, still probably very pricey, I would say.
Oh, I would imagine. I don't think there's a postcode round their means that's...
No, and they've got the lovely pub called The Spaniards up there, which is like the celebrity sort of Sunday lunch pub.
Okay. Go and have a roast.
Yeah, go and have a roast and a little glass of red wine
or something. A glass of Sav.
Yeah, treat yourself.
You can tell you're the classy one. You're like red. I'm like Sav.
Well, look, I mean, whatever gets you through the day, you know, so, no complaints. But, how did we even get onto this conversation? Oh, celebrity crushes. Yeah, wow.
What was your celebrity crush, Stephen? Or who?
I had, when I was younger, you know, Darren Hayes from Savage Garden? Do you remember him?
Oh, I'm not sure.
You may recognize
the bell, but I can't picture the face.
So it was definitely him, and also, and this is quite embarrassing. He might have even been a guest on the show, actually. I'm trying to think. Maybe. Dane Bowers.
Oh, did you like a little bit of Daney?
Yeah, he was right up my street when I was about 15.
Love that.
Yeah. I mean, he's a handsome guy now, to be fair. I mean, actually, both of them are.
He's with Laura Anderson, isn't he? From Love Island.
Oh, Laura Anderson's been on the show before, definitely. I remember. That was kind of my vibe when I was growing up. I've always liked a kind of beardy sort of guy.
Yeah, and I've realised, I think it's a sign that I'm obviously getting older. Well, I mean, no obvious about it. I guess that's just the way life works. I am getting older.
Yeah.
But crushes I would have had at school or in my teens, or the kind of age bracket of celebrities that you crushed on and fancied, now I'm at a stage where I'm liking silver foxes. I've definitely kind of moved on where I'm kind of thinking, oh, I do love a silver fox.
Are we getting into the 60 plus age bracket now, is it, Bob?
I mean, I don't discriminate against the age. but there is something very nice about it. You know, and it goes, what do they call it? A bit of salt and pepper?
Salt and pepper, just a
few coming through on the side. Very much still like a little bit of stubble on the guy. But yeah, I guess, that's the sign of aging that I'm now fancy. I mean, even old George Clooney.
Yeah, true.
How old he is. But,
I think he's coming up 60, must be. Because Brad Pitt's 58 now. 56, 58, something like that.
And looking good on it.
Certainly is. I wonder if he's had a few little tweetments here and there.
Oh.
I don't know.
We need to get him on Access School Areas and ask him. obviously, not specifying who, because it's just all rumours, but I think there's a lot of people in Hollywood, more than ever would admit, have all had just a little something, not necessarily surgery, but have had a little bit of help along the way, shall we say.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. There was actually someone on the red carpet, a woman on the red carpet, who is very well renowned for being, like, natural, who I was like, oh, no, you've definitely had a facelift. I can see it. You know, like, you're like, oh, it's subtle. It's subtle.
Is she a slightly older lady?
Slightly older lady.
Yeah.
British.
Yeah. Initials?
I can't say.
Celebrity siblings?
No, I wouldn't say so. I think some people now have it done very subtly, because her face still moves quite normally. She's like, she's got wrinkles, but it's just that little bit too tight to be normal skin.
And I think there is very much that key now, and I think that's where surgery's definitely evolved over the last few years, because some people would get pulled so tight. And the thing with a facelift, like I say, it's become a lot better now. And I think some people go, like, let's not make it too over the top. Like, don't make me look 16.
Yeah.
When I'm clearly 70.
Yeah.
But when people did that, it was always very clear, because the neck's always your giveaway, because your face can be up here and neck's a funny one to do.
Yeah, because you can't, it's not like you can tuck a bit of skin somewhere, is it? Because you can't, like with a facelift, you can put it by the ear, you know, but you can't really do that.
One of the shiny secrets, what a lot of celebs.
Well, they do the tape, don't they?
The tape, lift the hair up, tape the neck back. I guess basically like a really strong tip tape. Put the hair down just to kind of pull the neck back.
But the weird thing is when you like get home at the end and you like rip your tape off and like a big turkey neck,
and then it just flops out like a bulldog.
Yeah,
but whatever floats your boat. If you want your face.
Oh.
We don't judge.
No, absolutely not. And do what you like. But I do agree with you. I think like that sort of that still aged, but like they've aged well. Like, you know, I think people are maybe less inclined. Well, actually, a bit like you, to be honest, Bob. Less inclined to get like fillers or anything like that, really, because because you don't want to look plastic. Do you know what I mean? You want to look like a natural, normal person, but just enhanced.
And I think sometimes it's not until you've kind of gave a few things a go and you've lived with it and kind of that becomes your new normal when you see yourself. And then you do have that moment where you look back at something, whether it's an old video, photo, or a show, if it's you've filmed something. And then you kind of, I think very much it's the looking back and seeing that you've kind of gone on this journey. And like I was very open at the start of the year after Christmas. I was like, I'm very much, I just want rid of everything I'd done, really. because I just think that was a moment in time where I was in my life. I don't regret it. Made me happy. Was very happy with the result. But for me, I just changed. Just didn't want that, which obviously is a lot easier to reverse when it's like Botox and fillers. When it's surgery, probably not so much. But another aging sign. Again, things have changed all the time. I know people have injectables done in their hands, but hands always a telltale sign.
Can you get injectables in your hands?
I think people can have some things done to kind of, I don't know if it's a Botox or a filler. I'm not sure 100%, but I'm sure, because just, you know, with age, I think the skin thins. But kind of like the neck, what we're saying, is there's certain parts that you see people at award ceremonies.
You're like, oh, okay.
Which I kind of think is why people kind of think you're better off. I always think you're better off. Yeah, if you want to take off 10 years or however many years, whatever you want to do, obviously, it's a personal choice, but still want to look good for it. And it still kind of matches everything.
Yeah, yeah.
You know
exactly.
What I mean? It's
yeah,
when
totally.
One part completely doesn't. But again, that's not body shaming or anything.
People do what they like. I always remember Sharon Osbourne saying, the most painful thing she had done, and it does sound really horrible, was a leg lift where they where what they do is, this is not our normal topic of conversation when we're opening a show, but this is interesting, I promise. They basically cut us like a strap of skin from the top of your legs and then pull them up like tights.
Like tights.
Yeah.
And she said that
well, it means you don't have like wrinkles and that on your legs. It tightens the skin on your legs, like you would pulling up a pair of skinny jeans, I guess. Like, you know, you pull them up to make them fit better. It's basically what you do with the skin on your legs. And she said that was the most painful thing she's ever had done. And you can see why, because you wouldn't be able to walk or anything for like a while, right? Like,
I can imagine that because even if you ever like. And it could be sometimes for me, whenever I get it, it's not even necessarily if I'm in a gym that I get it. It's always just like if I'm on a sofa or in bed, I don't know if I twist my leg the wrong. Do you ever get cramp?
Yeah.
So just knowing how bad cramp can be to the point that sometimes I can't even stand up or I'm literally like, I could scream without being like, I'm a bit like, and it's not, it's not like I've even been squatting or anything. I could have just been just laying there, flicking through Netflix in bed. I've got my legs gone. So to have slices cut and pulled up, I can imagine that's quite sore. But I also think it's quite amazing that people can have all these options and do what makes them feel better. And I'm glad that we live in a society now that's more accepting. I think back in the day of old school, especially old school Hollywood, people wouldn't ever say, oh, I've had this, that and the other.
People are very open about it
for
now.
Some people, and I think it's not for some people, especially like things like Botox, for some people start going to have an haircut. I'm like, go and bathe if you want to go and have a little bit of Bowie. Do it.
Why not? Treat yourself. Yeah, absolutely.
Treat yourself.
Well, very exciting. We've gone way off topic to what we normally talk about. So let's revisit the show business in a bit because we have a very exciting show. We have former Great British Bake Off champ Nancy Birtwistle on to come and talk all about her new book and loads of stuff she's got going on. And then we also have from Married at First Sight, Matt and Dan, who are basically one of the only successful couples, I think, from the show. on to talk about what they're up to. So Nancy's here waiting to come into the room. So let's go.
Oh, amazing.
Nancy, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Really good.
Lovely to have you on this evening.
So where are you guys then?
Well, not in our normal studio, that's for sure. I am in I'm in my office in Camden and Bob is at home. So
we're still working remotely, like literally through lockdown. We've just been doing everything via Zoom.
Well, I do as well, and I like it because, like, you know, I've got the tea going in there, and then when we've finished it, I'll be back. I love it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you don't have to do any commuting or get, you know, any faffing around. Like you said, you can just get on with your dinner once you've finished with us. I mean, that's great.
I'll close the MacBook and I'm already in bed.
Well, You look as though you're in bed. Yeah,
he is. He
I
is.
Am. Yeah. I am. I'm in the boudoir.
I love it.
So, how have things been for you, Nancy? It's obviously been quite a few years now since Bake Off, right? But things have kind of gone very well for you.
Well, Bake Off was 2014.
So 8 years ago. Wow. It seems
8 years
yesterday.
I know. And obviously I did a lot of baking shows and food shows and that sort of thing. And then I don't know how I got onto this sustainability route, but I started it in a serious way about maybe 5-6 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's like everything, the more that you know, the more there is to know. And it was just like, you know, the more I learned about things, the more I learned about you name it. I then wanted to know more about it and started sharing things on social media. And it just, there's obviously an appetite.
I was going to ask, what do you like feedback on social media? Because I think in the last few years, so many people are becoming more aware, aren't they? Which is an amazing thing.
Yeah. I mean, when I wrote Clean and Green, which was a year last January, I wasn't sure that there would be an appetite for making your own eco-friendly cleaning products. I knew I could write recipes for food. And I thought, if I can write recipes for food, I can probably write recipes for cleaning products as well. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know about you, but I tended to think that going eco-friendly was a little bit elitist. And there are a whole range of products out there for all kinds of things, whether it be organic food or eco-friendly cleaning products, all that kind of thing. But I thought, for me, if I look at me as a young mother with kids, I couldn't have afforded to pay 4 times the price for a bottle of eco-friendly cleaning liquid. So I thought, well, if I can come up with things that are as good as but cheaper than supermarket-owned brands of your ordinary bog-standard kill-the-fishes-type cleaning products, then, you know, I'm on a winner. And so that's what I started to do. And I've been absolutely overwhelmed by the appetite for it because they work. I think we've been brainwashed into thinking that natural products are inferior to chemical-heavy cleaning products, and they're not. They're better.
I was going to say, some of the best products are, excuse me, better, aren't they? The ones that you can make home for very little money.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, the obviously the toilet was going to be the difficult one because I used to be a real bleach queen. I used to use gallons of the stuff. But then what happened was, now I would ask anybody, if they're thinking about going green and what are the reasons why you should really go green, I'd just say, have a look at the reverse labels on the products that you have in your house. Because there's a standard warning in the UK. I think in the US they don't use it so much, but in the UK there is a standard warning that says harmful to aquatic life with long-lasting effects. And you'll be surprised at how many products that's stamped on the back of. And if it's not on the product itself, all you have to do is go and have a look at the data sheet online. And there's probably something there about how toxic the products are. So I made the switch and I absolutely, and it's addictive. It's addictive in a feel good sort of way. Yeah.
Do you think that the pandemic sort of brought on people's awareness of their impact on what's going on around them? Or do you think it was happening before that?
I really do think that the pandemic was a real wake-up call to let us know that actually we're not in charge.
Nature
is very much in charge. We're not in charge. And I think people had a bit more time to sit and reflect about how they're living their lives. And they had a bit more time to maybe think, oh, well, I'll make this cleaner or that cleaner. They wouldn't be able to have their cleaner coming into the house at that time. So they've had to do their own cleaning. Mm-hmm. And you know, and I think it was a catalyst for people doing a bit more, and not necessarily cleaning themselves, but baking themselves, making themselves, growing their own food. I think there was a lot of people, myself included, thought, actually, I quite enjoy some downtime and some time where, you know, like we said earlier, you'd travel maybe 2 hours on the train to go to a meeting, but you'd jump on a Zoom call now.
Mm. Out of all the products that you've got in the book, what's like the number one when you hear back from fans, like in the supermarket, on social media? What's the one that comes up time and time again that people just rave about?
There is a star in this book. And I wrote it with this recipe for clean and green. And it was, I started to talk about it and I just got waylaid then. But I was looking for an effective cleaner that would replace chlorine bleach. And it took some sorting out, but I came up with what I called toilet magic. And I know
toilet lovely magic. Sounds delightful.
Yeah, toilet magic. And it's a spray cleaner, but it's an amazing job. It kills germs, it destroys limescale, it smells like a toilet cleaner, it freshens, it does all the things that a toilet cleaner should do. And then in the latest book, I put it back in again because what I found out was it had so many other uses. And I put out to my social media audience, let's find another name for this because toilet magic isn't doing it justice.
It you can't use just, it in the kitchen.
Yeah, it is so good. I mean, shower screens and descaling coffee machines and kettles, it'll clean green algae, it'll whiten your clothes, it will get rid of stains. It is absolutely amazing. So I put out a little competition. I said, we've got to find a different name for this product. So one follower came up with Pure Magic.
Oh, yeah, perfect.
So it's now called Pure Magic and it's awesome. It's awesome. The active ingredient in it is citric acid. But it took me a long, long time to be able to get the saturation point right and stop it recrystallizing and all that sort of thing. But we've got it sorted and it is amazing.
So it's like a proper chemistry thing you've been sort of yeah. working on, isn't it? I can imagine you in a white lab coat, like in a garage yeah. or something. Like,
I tell you what, if I'd been taught chemistry or to any of the sciences at school, if we'd been looking at trying to do it for a purpose, whereas we didn't seem to have any purpose to our science lessons, but that's a lot of years ago. So
I remember that well, to be fair. And what was it? Oh, actually, fair, it was 20 years ago for me now as well. So it wasn't that recent.
To be fair, we just messed about with a Bunsen burner.
Yes, well, I did that fit more than 50 years ago. So that's how much it moved on.
So obviously you mentioned earlier, it's your kind of focus has shifted a bit, I guess, from baking more onto sort of eco living. In your new book, is there any baking at all? Is there any sort of food stuff, or is it strictly cleaning stuff?
No, the first book was cleaning, and then right, I need to develop this green journey. I'm going to move on. And so what we're doing in the latest book, we're baking, we're cooking, we're growing some food. I'm explaining how you can, once you've grown it, you might have a glut of tomatoes, what you then do with them all. But I think the fundamental message in this latest book is not only are we saving the planet, obviously when I wrote this, which was about a year ago, the focus was on saving the planet. Now, of course, energy prices are just going absolutely through the roof. So the two actually go together because by saving the planet, we're using less. Mm-hmm. So I talk about cold washing, which is an absolute, it's a no-brainer. I've been doing it now for over a year because some cultures have always washed in cold water. When I say cold, it's 20 degrees, so it's a sort of tepid temperature. Mm. But that is going to save you about, well over 50% on your laundry energy costs.
Wow.
It's brilliant. And another thing is oven cooking. because people don't realise, I didn't realise, that if you're using any more than one ring on your hob or on your stove top, it's cheaper to put the oven on. In fact, some electric hobs, one ring is more expensive than the oven. So wow. there's a week's recipes where we just oven cook. I even supply the shopping list. So if you're a busy working person with a family to feed, you don't know what to give them every night for tea, there's your shopping list. That'll sort you out for a week and everything's cooked in the oven. My hob is nearly redundant.
So I say a lot of it is education, though, isn't it? Because I think a lot of us are just conditioned to think about the hotter the wash, the cleaner the clothes, and going back to the products. Yep. I was guilty of it myself. I've got OCD tendencies. So the smell of bleach I associated with clean. So loved my toilet. Do you know what I mean? But we've evolved now and we know so much more, but it's just getting the message out there, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think, and I totally get it, everybody's busy. Everybody's busy. So the changes have to be achievable. They have to be quick, but they have to work as well. But if at the end of it, you're going to save money, that's the driver for so many people, is if I can save money, but still get a better outcome or the same outcome, and I'm saving the planet, that's a win-win.
Yeah.
And basically, that's what this latest book is about.
So and what a time that we need it most, you know what I mean? It's like you couldn't have predicted it.
No. I mean, obviously, there was COP26 and all that, and the timing was right for that. But this latest awfulness that we're going through, the fallout from that is going to be, you know, how do we afford our utilities? Mm. You know, we've got to make some choices, but we can make some enormous savings.
And people are looking for it desperately at the moment. Yeah, it's really come at the right time. Do you still get to do the sort of baking shows and the live demonstrations and stuff that I'm sure you get to do after you've done Bake Off, or is that kind of taking a bit of backseat?
Yes, No, I'm doing one tomorrow, actually.
Oh, are you?
Again, with COVID, until COVID, I used to be travelling around the country going to food shows and doing demos and seeing an audience and all this sort of thing. COVID came, and obviously all that was all just chopped off at the knees straight away. But then the Zoom stuff came, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. And I do quite a number of live demos. I've done bake-along demos, which is hilarious because I think I did one at Christmas time, and we had 150 on it, but they were from all over the world. That was, you know, amazing.
But
of course, and because everybody was doing it together, there'd be somebody saying, hang on, I've not got my eggs in yet. And somebody else was saying, oh, you're all right. You know, and it was very interactive and great fun. And then afterwards, everybody uploaded their images of what they'd made on social media. It was amazing. Amazing.
And I think as well, during the lockdowns that we've all had, so many people that had never picked up a mixing bowl and a pack of flour, but not only because there was just nothing to do, but wanting to bake. Do you know what I mean? Like when you could, I think it was things like getting flour at one point was hard, but you'd go on social media and it was just one thing after another. People was baking, and I think a lot of people have kind of found a love for that now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, during lockdown, I posted every day. Well, I post every day on social media anyway. But during lockdown, I tended to come on at the same time every day and said, right, today we can't get flour. So what we're going to do, what we're going to make is so-and-so. And people would say, I can't get hold of yeast. I mean, yeast was very difficult to get hold of because everybody decided they were going to make bread. And so yeast was very difficult to get hold of. So I said, right, we can't get yeast, folks. So let's make a loaf of bread. We're not going to use yeast. And so what we used was a little bit of saved dough from the previous loaf. And that became the feeder for the next loaf. And so it was a great exercise in, you know, making do in a way that we'd never had to do that before.
I remember watching your Instagrams during the it might have been the first lockdown. I can't remember exactly when, and thinking like how upbeat you seemed during it all, because despite what everything that was going on, you seemed, and actually for some people that time was actually quite a nice time. I know my sister has said that she would love to have the time back with the kids again, where there was just the four of them in the house and doing all of that. Did you find some of that, like, did the constant baking and doing Instagram posts get boring after a while?
No, I actually, it was also, it gave me a purpose as well. Because I got so much feedback from people saying, I really look forward to this and I'm stuck in this flat and I can't go anywhere. And I really look forward to these posts. So getting that sort of feedback also inspired me to continue. You know, if nobody was writing back and say, or nobody was even liking
anything. Well, you got it wrong.
Yeah, exactly. So the feedback was tremendous. And people would upload, they said, I had a go at that. You know, I remember making a shortbread and I didn't have enough flour. So I was really in the cupboards looking for anything that I could throw in to make up the weight for this shortbread. So it was a fun thing as well as, you know, isn't this awful just being stuck in sort of thing. But yeah, I've enjoyed it. I enjoy it.
Are you still pals with Jonathan Van Ness?
Yes. Yeah.
Because he really rated you, didn't he, on one of his, I'm not sure if it was a podcast or on his show, and suddenly, you must have had a bit of an influx, I imagine.
Well, it's funny, you know, because when I won Bake Off, I didn't have any social media accounts. I mean, I just didn't really know it was a thing. I didn't even have a mobile phone when I did Bake Off. Because they used to take our phones off us when we arrived, and they used to say, oh, you're all right, Nancy, we know you haven't got one. And so, of course, when I won then, there wasn't that sort of wider social media audience mm-hmm. that I could relate to because I hadn't logged on to any of it.
Yeah.
And then I joined it very late. It was about 3 years later. So I sort of got onto Instagram and I immediately got maybe 200 or 300 followers or something like that. People that might have remembered me. But then I thought I'll start and post regularly, and I sort of looked at other accounts, see what other people do and this sort of thing. And Jonathan Van Ness used to message me, but I didn't know who he was. Right. And I just saw that he had this blue tick on his account. And in those days, he had about 800,000 followers. And he used to say, oh, I think you're amazing and da-da-da. Because by this time, Bake Off had gone on to Netflix.
Oh, and right,
so
yes.
So the Americans were starting to see it. So although it was 4 years down the road for me, it was year one for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to pick up some US followers. And then I remember seeing in the New Musical Express, is it, or one of those things, that he'd said the highlight of his Christmas was being followed back by me.
Love that.
Oh, dear me. I thought it was hilarious. And then I got to meet him a couple of years ago. He came to do a show in Manchester, and I popped over and met him. And he's absolutely gorgeous.
He's a bit of a whirlwind of a person, isn't he?
Yeah. He's wonderful. And he was always, always saying, you must follow Nancy. Because at that time, I was doing a sort of daily post, really to try and increase my following. Because I thought, how do you do it? I didn't know how to do it. But he was a great help. Yeah, he was always sort of giving me, a little bit of a shove and saying, you should follow Nancy. Yeah, yeah.
And do you enjoy social media, Nancy? But now you've kind of got it, got that profile, and your following's become far from what it was, you know? Like, and now, especially with the States and being on Netflix.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a sort of heap to get over, isn't it? To get used to just talking to a phone.
Yeah.
You know? that at first seemed really, really odd. And all I could see was my face. And I found it, when I look back at those early videos now, I think, oh dear, but, you know. But now I couldn't care less. I think I'm just as I am. Yeah.
Well, it obviously works.
People follow someone, they want you to be genuine. Because I think people know the minute you're not yourself, your followers and fans that know and love you, but they know you're not. So if you're not authentic, there's kind of just no point doing it, I don't think.
No. And I mean, there are some accounts. And the other thing that I've found that I thought might be difficult is how do I relate as an old person to young people? And I looked at some of the young accounts, and there's all these images of beautifulness, standing and posing in the best thing, and they've got all the makeup on. I thought, I'm going to look stupid. My kids will think I've gone completely off my rocker if I start doing stuff like that. So I thought, I'm just going to go out there. But I thought, it's got to be informative. There's no point in me standing with a new frock on and posing in it, because it's just laughable. It's got to be because I'm the wrong age. Yet my cohort of followers are between 25 and 34. So presumably there are a group of young people that want to know more about, you know, the things that I know that I think everybody knows. Obviously, everybody doesn't know.
Well, not everyone's got, you know, people in their family that they could go to and ask questions about, or because they wouldn't know, or, you know, and you can provide some of that kind of familial feeling that people are after, you know, like, and you've got the knowledge clearly because you've written all these books.
Well, you know, I've been around the block a few times. And so I mean, when you get to my age, you'll know a lot as well. I think it's just that you pick it up as you go along. And, you know, back in the sort of 1970s when I was a youngster, it was pretty tough as well. And it made me quite sort of resourceful and resilient. And so it's almost going back to that, but the agenda's slightly different. The agenda now is the climate, but also we're facing huge, huge energy costs, which obviously was an issue in the 70s as well.
Yeah, very true. Well, Nancy, we could talk to you all night. That was absolutely fascinating chat. Didn't even get to talk to you about Bake Off. We've run out of time. but thank you so much for joining us, and best of luck with the book. Hope it goes
well. Thanks very much.
Pick up a copy.
Thank you so much. Take care, Nancy.
And you. Thank you. Lovely to talk to you. Bye.
I love her.
So much we can learn, Bob.
I love Nancy.
now we just need to get a bottle of citric acid and start cleaning our shower screens.
We've got to do it. I'm genuinely going to get the book.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds really. I mean, I love doing stuff like that because it makes you feel like, exactly. Yeah, if we can even in our own tiny little ways halt, you know, the destruction of the natural world by not putting so much bleach down the toilet, then, well, let's go for it. You know,
baby steps. If everyone takes the baby steps.
You make a bigger step.
Miles will be made.
That's a good. I like that. Well done. Well, we have our next guest, Dan and Matt here.
Seb.
Hi. Can you hear us?
How are you? All right.
Yeah, good. Thanks. How are you?
Really good. Thank you for joining us this evening.
No worries. Thanks for having us.
How are you both feeling?
Oh, that's a nice backdrop. That looks like a comfy bed.
We're just literally saying, I don't think it'll be long until we're back in the studio. So I'm very much, I was going to say making the most. I've done every show in this bed throughout lockdown. So
yeah, this has been a year and a half now, Bob? Of doing
a year and a half of just working from bed in a non-kind of pretty woman prostitute sense.
Very suggestive.
Oh, bless you.
I'm going to just apologize because I think my Wi-Fi is having some serious issues. If I drop off, please just carry on without me and I will come back as soon as I can. How are you guys doing? How's life been since Married at First Sight?
No, it was amazing. It's been quite busy, actually. So full on. So we've actually moved to Northern Ireland. So Matthew and I live on the Causeway Coast. So we're just getting Matthew settled.
I've been there. Lovely part of the world.
Oh, have you? Have you been to the Causeway and things like that?
Yeah, yeah. I went on a trip to... there's a whiskey distillery.
Oh, yeah, Bushmills.
Bushmills.
Yeah.
And then we did a little tour around the Causeway. I mean, it's a lovely part of the world. How are you finding it there?
Yeah, I'm loving it. I mean, it's absolutely beautiful. And we've got a little bit of an ocean view as well from the apartment. I mean, we only moved in a month ago. So we were going backwards and forwards between Leeds and Northern Ireland. But yeah, I've moved everything over now. So we've got our own place, but it's just stunning. It's just completely different to living in a city. It's just like really, really calm. You can go walk by the sea every day. It's just absolutely beautiful.
So I've got to ask about the show. Like, you're one of very few people that have
watched. Yeah.
What do you think? What's the secret to it? Is it literally just, is it the pairing or is there?
Just gaze. You know?
I gaze.
We're desperate. Yeah.
Well, do you know what? We both came into it with a really open mind and a really open heart. And just from the first moment that we met, there was an attraction between us. But then we were really honest with each other and kind of laid it on the line of what we wanted. And I think respectful of each other as well. I think that's a key thing, to make sure that you're both aware of the other person's feelings as well, and make sure that you're both being true to yourself as well and true to each other, and not being scared of being open and honest about the way that you're feeling and what you kind of want from the process.
And we watched each other's audition tapes, and actually they're so similar in terms of what we wanted, why we were on the show and our intentions. And actually through that understanding, I think we knew we were both on the same page. So it was all a bit of crack. You know, if it didn't go well, you had a good experience. And if it did go well, you know, it's a win-win. So I couldn't have asked for a better outcome.
I think by both being on the same page and going into it open-minded, do you think that puts you in a better situation than someone that might go in there solely just looking for love and putting too much pressure on it?
I'd say so. I think you definitely have to go in and know that anything could happen. So by having that open mind and being flexible, you know, there wouldn't be any disappointment. Whereas I guess some people go in having real strong expectations, don't they? And then when that's not what's presented to them, then it can get a little bit nasty within the self, can't it? Because they're like, oh my goodness, this is not what I asked for. I've been lied to.
Yeah. But I think having that preconception and actually being so specific about what you're actually wanting and what you're looking for, that really puts you in a really difficult position, because you're never going to get that. You've got to be really open. And I always remember trying to think in my head, I don't want to have any preconceptions of what the guy's going to look like, what they'll be like. I want to just be really open to this person. But the one thing I will say is I was shocked when I was at the altar, when I turned around, because I, for some reason in my head, I didn't expect it to be somebody younger. I just had it in my
really?
Mind. Yeah, I thought it was going to be somebody older, but then obviously you were walking down the aisle.
Well,
I was pleasantly surprised.
I knew I was getting someone a lot older, because the casting team kept calling me near the time. They're like, Daniel, you know, what age could you go to? What would you be? Am I getting this geriatric? Am I getting
this? You got me.
I think you're so right, I would say, because a lot of people, not necessarily are married at first sight, but just going into to dating full stop, really, have almost a checklist.
And
when you ask, you can go, well, what do you want from someone? And I never really understand the people that can list off 6, 7, 8 things about someone, because you've almost made a shopping list in your head of someone that don't exist.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, or it's based on your ex or something, which is always a good...
That's why I scrapped the list.
Or like a certain type, like you said, like a physical attributes, I guess, is one thing. I mean, there are certain people in the show that were expecting a certain... criteria of man to appear, and obviously it wasn't that. It was more about the person that they were. But then some people can be so, I don't want to say anything out of turn, but like narrow-minded, and not allow themselves to open up to experience what could be something amazing with somebody that isn't their normal type, that they might not be initially attracted to, but giving it that opportunity, that chance to develop into something that they might have never even been able to get themselves.
Absolutely. And there seems to be so much need and love for this from viewers now, kind of like you say, married at first sight, we've got Love is Blind, this kind of show where people are meeting on a reality show under these situations, people are fascinated by it. Why do you think there is so much love for a show like that?
Well, I'd say it's the spontaneity of it. It's also, we would like to think, the truthfulness. You know, when you lock eyes with someone for the first time, and if you're either in a long-term relationship, that reuniting that memory for the person, or if they are single, they're like, oh my God, I want to have that. Or if they're in quite a comfortable place and they see people like slapping each other up, maybe they're like, oh, that bit of adrenaline. Like, yeah. We love a horror film. I suppose we enjoy watching those sometimes because it's scary positions that make us feel alive and things. So maybe there's a mixture of why people watch things, but I think it's that freshness, isn't it?
The freshness, but I have to say as well, the drama. Oh, I think people love the drama.
They want to see the failure.
Yeah, they want to see the failure. Okay. And they want to see all the arguments and the kind of the battles that people are going through. I think that's the thing that draws people to it. And as you will have seen in our show, in Murder First Sight UK, a lot of it was about the drama, not more so the good bits and the nice bits of the relationships developing and the love side of it. Obviously, they showed that, but the majority of it was the arguments and people not getting on and Nikita.
But isn't that kind of, I mean, like, the setup of the show, I mean, as much as you're kind of matched with one another, you know, it's not really a guarantee of success. And for it to be a gay couple that have come out of it and done as well as you have, do you think that's that's a really good thing, right?
Oh yeah, completely, 100%. So positive. And I think it, in my mind, I had real faith that they were going to do a good job. And that they were gonna really try hard.
That is a lot of faith to place in TV producers.
I know. Maybe it was misguided, but maybe not because it worked out and we got on really well. And a lot of our values and the way that we are, it does match very well, doesn't it?
Yeah, but we also thought maybe because we were the first same-sex couple on the UK version that they wouldn't want to screw it up, so there was maybe more free range with the heterosexuals. I don't know, because we just thought maybe we were lucky. It's the first one, and they told us lovely things, and they said they found someone really special. So yeah, we did go in blind, but we came out on top in the end.
Yeah.
So do you think, like, being gay, guys, it kind of made you more trusting? So when I did Celebs Go Dating, I was the first gay guy to do that, and I that in a situation that I can't relate it because that's just my experience. But for some reason, that made me feel more comfortable because I kind of thought, exactly like you said, I feel like, especially being the first, they wouldn't want to make a mockery of it, or they would want to give you the best shot you could possibly have.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally. And maybe also, again, being the only gay first person in that show, on this show, it kind of gives you a bit of empowerment. You know who you are coming into the show, or that's what was my stance. Mm-hmm. And that gave me confidence to then, you know, portray who I am and have that sense of ownership of our sexuality. And that was our little niche. We created a little bubble from that, I think, and that gave us strength together. Because I guess there was no comparisons. There was no other gay couple, so I wasn't worried that Matthew was going to go run off with Phil, you know, from Essex. Or Bobby Norris.
Did you film? Was there ever a point you've kind of had to once filming ends? Did you kind of have a moment where you thought, right, we've got to transition now into couple away from the show?
Yeah, definitely. I remember we did the final commitment ceremony where we kind of said we wanted to stay together and move forward from it. And then we come back and then we've got one night in the apartments, and then the next day we just kind of go. And we were down in Brighton. We stayed in Brighton a few days after, so we booked a hotel and stuff, but then we had to go our separate ways. But I always remember we went to that bar, didn't we? It was outside, it was a beautiful day. And it was kind of you just kind of do an exhale and you sit there and you're like, right, what do we do now?
Now what?
Now what's going to happen?
Do we even like it?
But that must be a real thing you have to think about. Like, the way from the cameras, what you actually like together. Like,
I know, exactly. Because we'd had, like, all our days were planned. We had a filming schedule and everything. And to be doing that for kind of nearly 3 months and then just suddenly...
And we lived in different countries as well. So
yeah.
But we worked it out. We worked it out. Yeah, I spent most of the summer in Leeds and we really didn't spend any time apart and we didn't go back to work for the summer. So we really were just enjoying each other's company. So it was a prolonged honeymoon.
Yeah. Maybe I should do Married First Sight. It seems to work for you.
Should we put our names down,
Do it. Recommend it. Recommend it a lot. You should do it. What an experience.
What does the future hold for you two now? What have you got planned or are you just kind of seeing where things go? And
so at the moment, I'm running my wellness retreats, Wild Bay retreats. So people come and they do, explore the Causeway Coast, yoga, meditation, and Matthew helps facilitate that with me. So we're using that. We're using our platform to bring people in to that sphere where they can come and relax and embrace meditation and a bit of adventure.
Yeah.
And
we're kind of building a life here as well. As I said, we've just moved into our new apartment. We're kind of settling in here. I'm getting to know the areas and what life is going to be like kind of here in Northern Ireland, a lot quieter. But then we've still got a lot of things going on. So we were over in Leeds last weekend at a charity event. I'm still very much involved in different charities that I've been working with. So I'm still doing that. And then we don't know what else is going to happen. We've got lots of different things in the pipeline, but I think the main thing is that we're together and we're starting to really build this life together and be here in Northern Ireland, which is really exciting.
Oh, I love that.
Sounds ideal. I mean, I don't know what you can say, really.
I've got to ask some of the other contestants on your series, what's the situation? Do you meet up? Do you talk? Is there a WhatsApp group? Spill the tea.
Right. So there was a WhatsApp group, but that when the show aired, that kind of people kind of left it as it was as it resolved.
As episodes was going on.
Yeah, as episodes was going on and little things were happening here and there, people kind of did it. But we speak to quite a few of the people because we got on with everybody really. It's actually my birthday on Friday. So I'm gonna be 40. Oh, thank you. I'm gonna be 40 and I'm having a party back over in Leeds. And I've invited most of the cast. I think most of them are coming.
I think so.
So it's gonna be most of them, yes. So it'll be a nice little reunion with some of them. But they're all, do you know what? They're all great people. They all went in there with their kind of their own expectations and their own agendas, I guess, as well. So people
got, and everyone's just cracking on with their own lives. And, you know, we do the odd hello and text. And you're very friendly with, like, naturally more people than other people. And I suppose it's just everyone's nice.
Yeah, like anything in life, right? Yeah.
And how do you expect the party to go? I mean, is there potential for there to be fireworks at the 40th?
I reckon so.
Or you've been selective with the invite.
Do you know what? I haven't actually. I haven't invited most of them. And I actually was saying this to you the other day when I was like, oh no, I've invited that person and I don't know if they're going to get on because there's only me and Dan together and Adam and Taya from the show. So there are people that obviously have had serious falls. Afterwards, after filming. So it'll be interesting to see.
They're going to be calling you out, going, can we send a little camera crew down?
The follow-up. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us this evening. It's really nice to meet you both, and best of luck, especially with the wellness retreat. That sounds lovely.
Oh, thanks so much. Well,
and happy birthday.
Let me know.
Definitely. Oh, have the most amazing birthday, won't you? Good luck. I hope there ain't too much drama.
Hopefully not. Thank you so much, guys. Love
Take
to meet
care.
You,
thank you.
Thank
bye,
you.
Guys. Stay
bye.
Safe.
Bye. Take care.
Oh, girls, it's nice to actually see the ending to a show like that, isn't there? Because there's only two.
Yeah, well, yeah. But also, did you see the way they were looking at one another? How adorable. They're like, they just really like one another.
It kind of makes you think that there's a lot, whatever goes into behind the scenes there, I do think someone's matched that perfectly. Most type of go, oh, it's a reality TV show, they're setting people up for drama. I don't think they've done that with them two. Them two generally seem like they found their lobster, as they'd say on Friends.
For all the failures that Married at First Sight UK and around the world
churned out.
Nice to see that it can work for some people.
I'd love to be a fly on the wall at that party though, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I'm sure there'll be some Instagram pictures we could have a look at.
Risky move when you're inviting any exes to a party, let alone when they've been married to each other. Divorces.
However briefly.
Yeah, 35 minutes.
I feel like we should touch on a little bit of showbiz news. We're running out of time, but we haven't done any today. But I want to just say Eurovision is around the corner. It is Eurovision season, Bob, and I'm very excited.
Talk to me about it, because out of everyone I know, Stephen, you are the king of Eurovision.
King and queen. So, well, this is the first time this has probably happened in about 20 years, but the UK entry is actually really, like, favoured and could actually win.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And has the song been released? Have you heard it?
Yeah, it's been released. He's an Essex local. He's called Sam Ryder.
Okay.
He looks like a bit of a Viking. He's got really long hair and a big beard, and he has the most incredible voice. He kind of came to fame on TikTok during the pandemic singing covers, and he's now got he's had a record deal. He gigs all over the country, and now he's going to represent the UK. His song's called Spaceman. And I would 100% tell everyone to check it out. I think it's in with a really good shot in Turin in Italy in May, when the contest is. So,
and is this the most confident you've been in quite a few years that we could actually win? Because when did we last win? Was it Bucks Fizz?
It was 1998, I believe, with Katrina and the Waves, Love Shine a Light.
It was Katrina in the Waves on Eurovision.
Yeah. For the UK, 98. But we came fifth about maybe 15 years ago with Jade Ewan. Remember her?
Okay,
and with a song written by Andrew Lloyd Webber. And then when Blue entered in 2011, see, I mean, my knowledge here. When they entered in 2011, we got like 10th or something. We haven't had many success stories, but I think this year could... I don't know if we'll win, but I think we'll do very well. I think that's
someone that's such a huge fan and, like, you know it inside out, would you say, because I'm genuinely fascinated, even if you had the best performer and the best song, does some kind of politics come into Eurovision, or is it solely, does all that get left at the stage door and it just becomes about the act?
If the act and the song is really, really good, it will win. I think it's
as simple as that. If we sent out Adele, we're laughing.
Only if the song was good. If the song wasn't good and the people, like, it would have to be, you have to capture a moment, you have to get the staging perfectly right. And if
I
all of that,
could do that.
She's got
a couple in her locker, I reckon.
If she wanted to, I think she could. But I'm dead excited. I'm excited this year that we might actually, because I mean, we've had 2 years of 0 points. So I'm hoping that this year will be the first when we, first in 3 years at least, when we, and you know, we've had our contestants on and stuff. James Newman, he was great, and he's a great guy, but it just didn't work out. And maybe Sam Ryder is the one.
So if Sam wins for us.
Yeah.
It comes the following year to the UK.
Yeah, yeah.
Cheltenham 2023. You're going to get tickets. Oh, it's going to be in Cheltenham.
No. I'm just making that up.
But I'm guessing you will absolutely be getting tickets if it's in the UK.
I'll be there. I'll be working there. I'll be whatever anyone needs me to do. I will be there. Do it. Right up my street. But anyway, we've come to the end of the show.
What a lovely show.
What a lovely show. We've really chatted on this show, Bob, as well. I mean, we've really gone on. But you got anything exciting coming up in the next week?
I have, actually. Not too much I can really talk about, though, which is a little bit boring.
Okay.
A couple of exciting bits and bobs over the next coming weeks. But how about yourself, mister?
Hopefully going to book a holiday.
Nice.
To Sicily in the next couple of days.
And have a couple of arancini balls for me.
Oh, yeah, delicious. And I pretty much think that's it.
That's quite a big thing. That's for one week.
And then just seeing some friends, getting on with stuff, really. So yeah, nice, all good.
Okay. And it's, clock should be changing soon, shouldn't they? We'll be getting
week after next. Weekend after next, I think. Yeah, we'll be having them light evenings again.
Spring's coming, Stephen. Spring's coming.
It's coming, it's here, it's round the corner. We haven't got long to wait. Great show, and thanks everyone for listening. Until next week. Goodbye.
Bye, guys.